Any questions?
So, do you actually select which experiments can be run, and which are, you mentioned that you've been looking at the feasibility of some experiments, but do you actually have a plan as to what sort of types of experiments you're targeting or something, or can be absolutely anything that children want to do?
It can be absolutely anything that fits into the parameters of the physical hardware that we have. So if they want to, right now we've got a camera on the Sagan, but it's not pointing out towards the vacuum of space or towards a window or something like that. So we can't physically take pictures in space. Instead, we've got a different kind of picture setup where objects collide in zero gravity, so kids can monitor that. So there are certain limitations we have. And there are certain things we can't do because this is our very first mission. It's actually a first for Australia as well. We're the first company, apart from Optus, to be approved to fly anything into space. And because of that, it's sort of like a very... it's a very new thing, and that means we're starting off small. So there are a few limitations in terms of what experiments students can do, but what we found is that some of them are really creative. Like, we don't have a Geiger counter, for instance, on our board. But students have tried to make a Geiger counter using software and the CMOS sensor on our camera. They've actually developed some really nifty software to work around that. So it all really depends on how creative the students get as well on that end too. But there are certain things that we have to look at and basically certain requirements that we have to adhere to as well because we are launching with NASA and a whole bunch of other organizations as well. So we can't just sort of go crazy with the type of experiments we can run. No, not initially. But that's something that we are looking at doing in the future, seeing what kind of experiments people want to be running and seeing what things could really benefit the most students, and we'll be going from there. Yes?
Have you considered working with any kind of school groups?
Yes, actually, we have. So we get lots of inquiries through our website, and just to start, just a few days ago, we've actually had a few homeschool parents starting to contact us saying, we've seen you in the news, or we've seen you there or here, and now there is starting to be sort of like a little bit of interest with homeschoolers, and we'd absolutely, do you know any homeschoolers?
Because yes.
We should talk then, because we'd love to have some homeschools as well in our program. Yes?
I was wondering, how did QBrighter get started?
Yeah, no, sure. So, Solange and myself are the founders of QBrighter. We both used to intern at a space company in Sydney called Sabre Astronautics. Some of you may have heard of it before. And I got bitten by the entrepreneurship bug really early in my university degree. And what's happened is I really, really wanted to start something in space. And so I came to Solange one day and I said, hey, do you want to send satellites to space? And she was like, yeah, absolutely. How are we going to do it? And I said, well, I've got an idea. And it was basically a ride-sharing concept. So basically, as many different experiments, as many different payloads you could fit onto one vessel as possible, and then launch that to space to basically reduce the cost for everyone. And we thought that was a really great idea until we realized how much it's going to cost, until we realized the sort of technical challenges involved. And then we sort of pivoted because we realized that education, something we're both very passionate about, but is also something that's a lot easier to do in Australia as well, because there aren't many customers in Australia that would want to pay, $50,000 to send a piece of hardware to space on a satellite, for instance. And so that's why we sort of pivoted into this. But basically, it started because two people were really passionate about space, and we really wanted to kickstart an industry, and no one else was doing it. So we're like, well, screw you guys, we're going to do it. But yeah. Any other questions, guys? Yeah?
What sensors do you have on the Sagan?
Okay. So they're all commercial off-the-shelf sensors, right? That was one of the reasons why we got so quickly approved to fly into space by the company that we're working with, which is actually Nanorax. So Nanorax is a subsidiary company of NASA, kind of. And what happens is they basically help facilitate launches. They give us access to the International Space Station and so forth. And we basically worked with them to decide what kind of sensors would be feasible for a quick first launch. And we decided on an IMU, which is basically an accelerometer, gyroscope, and magnetometer. We have a barometer on there, which does temperature, pressure, and humidity. We also have a UV detector. We have an infrared sensor. We have two other temperature... We've really got lots of temperature sensors. We've got two other temperature sensors on board. We've got a real-time clock, and that should be all of it, I think. And a camera as well. Sorry, a camera. And we've got a few LEDs as well. So with all of that combined, students are really trying to figure out what kinds of experiments they could do in those parameters. Yeah. Any other questions, guys? Yes? So it's not strictly high school. Like I said in the beginning, we aim to target students in years 9 and 10 because we do realize that there is a pivotal point in those students' lives where they go and choose what they want to do. But with that being said, we've had school students knocking on the teachers' doors actually wanting to, and they're in year 7, for instance, and they really, really want to do space stuff. So they work with a whole bunch of different students from years 12 to 7 to actually do it. And we've also had some interest from primary schools as well. What year are you in, man?
5.
Okay. So yeah, we've had some interest from primary schools as well. And it really depends on the school and whether they want to run it or not in their school. But maybe talk to your teacher. Any other questions? Oh, yeah.
What are the uses of SAGE?
So that's a good question. With Nanorax, a company I mentioned beforehand, we don't actually have to do much hardening. There's a bit of circuit protection on the actual device itself, but because our mission is only a one-month mission, we're using commercial off-the-shelf components, we didn't really see the cost benefit to actually do some hardening for something that's going to be inside the ISS as well. So that's we really had sort of like a trade-off with that. But perhaps with future missions, depending on how long they are and if they're outside the ISS or if they're outside a manned capsule, then that might be a different story. But we have been looking, when we first started CubeRider and we were thinking of doing, so going down a different path, we were looking at different hardened instruments and stuff like that, and we just found that they cost a lot of money. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes?
Is there that much more involved in sending something outside the ISS? Like, is it more complicated in any way, or is more...
Yeah. Yeah. So, basically, if you want to send something outside the ISS, it does become a lot more complex. So it's not just a matter of finding some commercial off-the-shelf like electronic components and matching them all together anymore. It becomes a much more difficult engineering challenge, not only to protect your hardware and software, but also to get approval from the Australian government, which is a big deal as well, and also getting approval from NASA to fly. And if you want infrastructure that is semi-permanent, so greater than 6 months on the International Space Station, then there becomes an even more rigorous amount of testing that you actually have to do. And as a startup, we're just not prepared to do that yet because we're still very early stage. But that is something that we're looking on in the future as well. I suggest contacting companies like Nanorax and other people that launch to really give you a better idea of what it takes to actually go and fly something outside and have it sitting in space for a very, very long time, if that's your aim. CubeSats are different as well because you can actually buy a lot of components from stores that have flight heritage, which just basically means they've flown into space before. And it really depends on what your mission is as well.
So what happens to these experiments at the end of the mission?
So
I know they send like the Soyuz back and like well not Soyuz, whatever the capsule is,
yeah.
It just burns up in the atmosphere. Is that what happens or
so good question actually, because Nanorax has joked with us that astronauts just toss it out the airlock. I'm not sure how serious they are with that. Now that you mention it, it's probably like an actual spacecraft that burns up, but it'd be pretty cool if it was just like out of the airlock or something. I would have probably put a radio on it to see if it could pick up something as it was going through space. But yeah, so you can pay extra to bring it back on a Dragon capsule, because the SpaceX Dragon capsules actually do have re-entry capability. And that, again, as a start, this is out of our price range, but that is something we're looking at doing in the future. For most Nanorax payloads, they do pretty much just get burnt up in space on re-entry. They don't really bother about having any sort of return capabilities unless you specifically request it. In that case, it costs a bit more. But yeah. Any other questions, guys? Yes?
Yeah, do you put any limitations on the design, like a power budget or maximum flight size or number of...
Yes. Absolutely. So right now, we've been conservative and we've basically given every school 15 minutes to run an experiment in space. They get a 5 megabyte size budget, but we're still negotiating that with NanoRacks, and they do have a maximum power budget as well, because our power budget from the ISS is only 2-watt power draw, so that does inhibit things. The ISS also has maximum downlink as well and uplink capabilities, so you can't exceed that, otherwise it'll just be too inconceivable to actually send any data down. I mean, if one school ended up having like a 5 gigabyte file that they want to send down, we couldn't do it. You know, the International Space Station couldn't cope with that. So that's something we also have to look at. And there are a lot of parameters that students and schools have to adhere to before we can actually send it up to space as well. But that's something that they learn in the curriculum as well, and something that they sort of negotiate and talk with us about.
So I think that would be really important learning.
Yeah, exactly. It actually is. Very. Yeah. Any other questions, guys? Oh, yeah.
So it'll actually be a vacuum, like the space vacuum, or is it just
inside? No, so this one's going to be inside the International Space Station. So the next one we're doing, we're hoping to get outside in the vacuum of space. So that'll be basically outside, sitting in the Japanese module. I think it's called the Kibo module. And that'll be basically sitting there. But right now, this one is sort of very much sort of like a first test run. Kind of like a prototype. Yeah. But thank you guys for listening to my talk. I really appreciate it. And have a great time. Enjoy Final Frontier Festival. It's pretty cool.